John Lovitz is here in the studio with us this afternoon. You remember John from his work so many years on Saturday Night Live and in so many movies, from Big to League of Their Own to most recently The Benchwarmers and so many others in between. And he's also now apparently killed Jared and taken over the Subway commercials in his master thespian role. Welcome to KMOX.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure having you here.
Yeah, Jared, he lost too much weight and they had to let him go. And I puffed up over the years. They go, you'll do.
That's good. That's a good strategy, eating a lot as you went along. Yeah. I got to ask you a commercial question. I heard a rumor that years ago you were offered the Joe Isuzu job when you were doing Saturday Night Live and you were doing Tommy Flanagan and
The Liar. No, that's not. Yeah, that's the story they put out. What happened was, I was doing my Liar character and it caught on, you know, like nationally.
Mm-hmm.
And then they called my agent and said, you know, how much would he want for commercials? So my agent said, well, he needs like this amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
And then what was it, the Jerry Delafamina, the ad agency, they made it like, we came up with this campaign. Joe Isuzu is going to sell Isuzus, and he lies about everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then they went like, and then someone said, oh, what a coincidence, because this guy in Saturday Night Live is doing a liar character.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not what happened. They wrote it for me, and my agent said he needs a lot of money. So then they decided to, you know, change it. And I had friends call me. They go, yeah, I'm auditioning for this commercial, and they want me to imitate you. And
so basically, they wouldn't cough up the money and decided to get somebody else to play you.
Right, and then I even knew that David Leisure ended up doing it, and you know, I'd run into him, and he goes, oh, sorry, you know. And I said, no. I go, it's fine. I go, you're just an actor doing a job, and you're not really doing me, and you know, you had nothing to do with it. And he's a really nice guy, and he was funny. You know, what I didn't like was the ad agency saying that, you know, I had nothing to do with it, and then every article I was mentioned, you know, about this ad campaign.
Yeah, it was obviously a tie-in with you.
Lucky for us, John Lovitz passed on it, because then we got this guy to do it, you know, and it was written for me originally. So I ended up calling up Jerry Delafamina on the ad agency. This guy says, well, who are, and I said, you know, I'm John Lovitz from Saturday Night Live, and I do my liar character, and every article in this Joe Isuzu I mentioned. And at first he goes, well, who are you? And then a minute later he goes, hey, would you like to do commercials for us?
Oh my God.
I thought you didn't know who I was. Now you're offering, you know. And, but I knew how to annoy people quite well so that they'll leave me alone. So I went on and on. I go, okay, but I keep seeing my name about this. He goes, all right, well, we won't do anything. I go, well, okay, but I keep seeing it. And I did this for like 20 minutes. He goes, okay.
We get it, finally.
Yeah, no, I never saw it. But yeah, that was a total, was a lie.
Was that a character you created at the Groundlings in Los Angeles?
Yeah, it started off as an inside joke between a friend of mine and I, a girl I liked. And she'd say, well, she goes, I like a guy with a fat wallet. And I said, well, my dad just had 15 oil wells come in.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, you know, I am a pathological liar. It just started like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I like old movies. So, there, you know, I saw The Thin Man with William Powell, and I liked him. And there was a character in there who's going, they're grilling him. They go, where were you? You know, and he goes, I wasn't there. I was at the thing. Yeah, that's a ticket. And so I, you know, I didn't make up, yeah, that's a ticket. It was, I saw it from old movies. So I said, well, I sat home one day and I thought, well, this would be funny if like a guy was like instead of Alcoholics Anonymous, it was Pathological Liars Anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'd hear, not, you know, if you're an alcoholic, that's not funny. But, you know, you'd hear about people in AA and they'd have to get up and say, hi, my name is so-and-so and I'm an alcoholic, and they tell their story. So I thought, well, I'd parody that of a guy, Pathological Liars Anonymous, getting up like that. So I'd wear a cap like it was the 30s and I would be sweating, and that's how I did it at the Groundlings. And I said, yeah, my name is Tommy Flanagan. I'm a member of Pathological Liars Anonymous. In fact, I'm the president of that organization. So realized the guy couldn't stop lying. And actually, I started doing it in the Groundlings. We'd call it a panel where you'd have a host, and you'd have on a stage, and then six people in chairs. You know, the Groundlings is 99-seat theater in L.A. and is a well-known comedy and improv group.
It is to L.A. what Second City is to Chicago.
Right, and yeah. I'd worked my way up and through classes, and now he's in their B company, their Sunday company. So I said that, and then the audience would ask questions. So someone said, how long have you been lying? And I go, what are you talking about? I never said I lied. I don't know what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And then a friend of mine came up to me afterwards. She said, don't you realize what you did? She goes, you set it up perfectly, and now just make up, just answer the questions, and you can say anything, and it's funny. I was like, oh, she goes, yeah, she goes, what? She was like, what's your favorite sport? And I went, bowling. And it's, she'll see, and I went, oh, my God. And I, there was one guy in my class, he'd always come up with these great ideas that were really simple but great.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, I wish I could come up with ideas like that. And I, it just kind of, and then she pointed out, she goes, you did. And I went, oh, my God. And then I wrote it up as a monologue, and I remember calling my friend. I was like, hey, I wrote this up. I think it's pretty funny. And I was doing it at the, I finally started doing it in January of 85. I got in the main company of the Groundlings, and I was doing it as a monologue I wrote. And then about toward the end of March, I got all these calls on my answering machine, congratulations and good luck, and over from all these people in the Groundlings. But they're not saying what it's for. So I call up the artistic director, this guy Tom Maxwell, and I said, what's going on? Everyone's congratulating me, but for what? He goes, we're going on, he was from South Carolina, he goes, we're going on the Tonight Show. I go, what? He goes, yeah, it's you doing your live character, and you and Tim Stack, and Don Woodard, and Mindy Sterling, and Kate Benton. I go, we're going on the Tonight Show. When? He goes, Thursday. And it was like Monday. I go, what? I go, we're going on the Tonight Show. He goes, yeah, isn't it great? I go, oh, my God. Are you serious? Because I'm doing this character as an inside joke. You know, but your friend of mine and I, we're doing it in a 99th Scene Theater, and I'm going on the Tonight Show.
And
in
85 would have been with Carson.
Right, it was with Johnny Carson. I couldn't believe it. And I get there, and except saying to Tom, what am I going to do? Because, you know, half the time it works. If they get their opening joke of, you know, I'm a member of that organization, then they get it works. But other half the time, it didn't work. And I go, he goes, yeah, it'll be fine, you know. And I didn't know what to do. And we go into the makeup room, and there's Jack Lemmon, and he's going to be in the show getting makeup on. And Morley Safer from 60 Minutes is following him doing a story.
Wow.
So they say, so I'm sitting there, and I can't believe it. And I'm there, and Morley Safer goes, so what have you learned about acting all these years? And Jack Lemmon goes, I've learned to keep it simple. That's the thing. And I went, oh, okay, I'll do that.
and then Jack Lemmon says it, I'm going to do it.
Right, because I was so nervous. I'm like, what am I going to do? Because, you know, it's a huge jump from doing, you know, in front of 99 people. You know, it's like a handful of people. And all of a sudden you're
30 million or something.
Small. Yeah, maybe it's 4 times the size of the room. And then all of a sudden you're on national television.
Right.
And then I went out and I asked the director, we rehearsed, I go, where do I look? You know, because the cameras are on the floor, but the audience is like way above you, you know,
yep.
Like in these stadium seats. So he said, just look into the lens, just look right into the camera. And I went, okay. So, and those two things helped me do it because I, you know, I had somewhere to focus.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember at the end of the monologue, I just said, so if you're out there, you know, and you look, you know, you have a problem with lying, give us a call. And in my head, I'm thinking, so if you're out there watching me, you're looking for an actor, you know, hire me.
Pretty
that
good.
Started
first.
It. Yeah, and I got an agent from it, and the remember, I was a messenger, and I was not making any money. So I said to the agent, he signed me like May. I remember all the dates because it's been like, you know, since I was 15, I did plays in high school, and I was a drama major for 4 years. Now it's 7 years later, so it's 13 years. I had one job when I was 25 for 2 weeks on this cable show, The Paper Chase, the second year. And so I said, now it's like 3 years later, and I said, you know, get me extra work on soaps because it would pay $90 a day.
Mm-hmm.
And I was making nothing. You know, I was making $5 an hour for, you know, I lived on basically $600 a month for 7 years. And
now here you are on The Tonight Show.
Yeah, and so, and it was huge. It was so exciting, and I remember I did it, and then I did a second character with Tim Stack, who is the star of that show, Son of the Beach, you know, mm-hmm. Great comedian.
Yep.
So we did this cart. I was like, it was like he was doing an infomercial to become a truck driver, and I was doing an imitation of Ross Porter, who was an announcer on the Dodgers. By the way, I'm Porter Ross. And Tim's dressed up as a cowboy and goes, I became a truck driver. You know, and I go, but wait, there's more. Then I became a senator. But wait, there's more. He goes, now I'm running for president of the United States. You know, and it was just a silly thing. And we finished it, and the audience is laughing. And I just jumped up in the air, and I looked at Johnny Carson. I gave him, a thumbs up sign, and he gave me the okay sign. I was like, yes.
Wow.
I was just so excited. And also, I jumped up in the air because I weighed 50 pounds less.
You could not have gotten the subway job then.
No.
No way.
It was thrilling. And then my agent said, no, don't do extra work. It was in June. It was on soaps, you know. There'll be auditions in a few, toward the end of June. Just wait. So the next day I said, okay. So, and I waited, and then I ended up getting everything I auditioned for, and I got a movie with Charles Grodin, and I got a recurring role in a series, Foley Square, which was the first show of that Diane English did, later created Murphy Brown, and it all fell into place. And Charles Grodin, we were shooting this movie on Catalina, and I was supposed to meet Lorne Michaels on a Wednesday, and they go, well, we want to put you in the movie more. So he on his own called Lorne Michaels and said, you know, can you wait till Friday, and you should take a good hard look at this guy. He's really funny. And
wow.
I hardly knew him, so he really helped me. And then Lorraine Newman had been in the original cast. She saw me in a show at the Groundlings and befriended me, and she recommended me. And everything, it just fell into place. And so it was just amazing. And by September, I'd done the series, Foley Square. And I did the movie Last Resort. And I did a voiceover for a cartoon, and I got Saturday Night Live. In June, I was saying, get me extra work in soap. So by September, I'd done all that.
Wow.
And then at the end of that year, I had a deal to star in my own movie. And so Time Magazine, there was an article about the comedy boom, and it goes, and then the biggest rags to riches story is probably John Lovitz, who was a messenger, and 9 months later he's, you know, going to be starring in his own movie.
Great. 1985
never happened,
but, great, you know, year for you. John's in town to work the Funny Bone tonight and tomorrow night and Saturday night. By the way, it's only two shows on Saturday night because he'll be just completely exhausted at that point and will not be able to perform anymore.
I'm tired now.
I want to play a piece of audio. You were talking about the year 1985 being an amazing year. I believe this audio is from that year. It's you and Phil Hartman on a skit that I know later on turned into a full-blown skit on Saturday Night Live. But I want to play this and have you explain to us where this came from. Here's some classic John Lovitz and Phil Hartman.
Hello, Harry.
Glad to see you. Listen, I've got some news for you. Your contract isn't being renewed. The studio's letting you go.
Level with me. If you're unhappy with my work, tell me now.
All right. Everyone says you're the worst actor in town.
Don't leave me hanging by a thread. If you're unhappy with my performance, just give it to me straight.
All right, you're through. Do you hear me through? You'll never work in this town again. Your life is finished.
What's the word on the street?
Why, you...
Now, what was that from? Do you have any idea?
Oh, yeah. That was a sketch called One More Mission. And it kind of makes me sad because, you know, Phil's not alive anymore. But
you two had such great chemistry
together.
Yeah,
we were just like one of my best friends. He's like my brother, you know, and he was such a great guy. And I idolized him. And but anyway, that was a sketch. We both liked old movies. And so it was a sketch called One More Mission that we wrote. And it was about – I played the head of a studio. And he – and like, say, Harry Warner, you know, And he played an actor in B-movies called Johnny O'Connor, and he'd made all these World War II movies, but he started going kind of nutty and actually thinking that he was like a pilot, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to fire him. I go, you know, you've been flying, you know, too long. It's high time you were grounded. And we were doing that rapid-fire dialogue from those movies. Like Phil and I would always do... He would whine for 2 cents, and I go, yeah, what would you do for a nickel? He goes, just cross that line. I go, you wish I wouldn't. I had, you know, we would do it all the time. So I finally said, we should write a sketch about it. So that's what it was. And that was really his favorite sketch he ever did on the show and mine, too. And, you know, I loved working with him, and it's just, you know, horrible that he's gone. And
yeah.
It was just.
So was that piece of audio that we heard there an audition piece that you did for Saturday Night Live together? Or
was that from the, I don't know. It sounded like it was from the sketch. Maybe it was.
I don't think it was the final on-air version.
Oh.
So I don't know where it was from.
Maybe it was from rehearsal then. Yeah, I don't know how you got that.
Yeah, the internet. You know, he just typed in John Lovitz.
Yeah, because yeah,
we contacted the NSA and they downloaded it for us.
Maybe it was from rehearsal I think it was a. It wasn't an audition. I think maybe it was from rehearsal then.
Is it true you got him on the show?
Well, I helped. I mean, what happened was after the first year, they let everybody go except for myself and Dennis Miller and Nora Dunn. So Dinah Minand, who was one of the producers in the show, said, well, she goes, we want to bring on people that you work well with. So I recommended 4 people from the Groundlings. I said Phil Hartman and Tim Stack and Tress McNeil and I'm blanking on my other friend's name. I feel horrible. Lynn. I'm blanking on her last name. Anyway, so they all auditioned, and Lauren said, well, those 2 women are great, but I think they're too old for the show. But they're fantastic, you know. And these were all people that I were in the company for years that I looked up to, you know, that I, in my head, were better than me. And then he goes, well, we have to choose between Tim and Phil. So I said, well, you know, I wanted both of them. I go, I can't say anything as Tim. He's my friend. I think it would be great. They said, but, you know, I think you'd be crazy not to hire Phil. He can do anything.
Yeah.
So. And also Lorraine Newman, you know, she recommended him, and Charles Grodin did too, because he'd been in that movie that Last Resort that I did too. Phil had been in that too. But I pushed, you know, a lot and helped him get on the show. But what happened was he was during the Olympics in 1984. It was in Los Angeles. So the Olympics sponsored an Olympics arts festival to go, you know, along with it. And part of it was, you know, theater, and they picked 9 theaters to give money to produce a show. So the Groundlings was one of the 9 theaters. So the Groundlings decided to pick Phil to do a show around this character he had called Chick Hazard, which was like a detective from the 40s.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd been in the Sunday Company for a year, and yet the thing was, after 6 months, you could be voted up into the main company. So I wasn't voted up after 6 months, but after a year, I still wasn't. And I remember the director of the Sunday Company goes, "Well, you know, we voted some other people because you're good enough to be in the main company, but you can do other things." And I was really angry. I go, "What do you mean? This is all I want to do." You know. So I met with Tom Maxwell, who's the artistic director. So he said, "Well, why don't you understudy in this play we're doing for the Olympic Arts Festival?" It was called Chick Hazard Olympic Trials. That was the name of Phil's character, Chick Hazard. And we'll see. He goes, "I've never worked with you, so let's work together." And some of the people I hadn't gotten along with in Groundlings says, "Well, you know, you didn't get along with so-and-so and so-and-so." And I go, "Well, you know, they're mentally ill." I don't get along with people that are mentally ill, you know. And it proved I was right. You know, these people were nuts, you know, and everyone, later on, other people had tons of problems with them, and they're like, "Oh, mm-hmm. my God."
It was them, not you.
Yeah, it was them.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, yes.
That's the point of the story.
You just gave me a look like, are you just realizing that?
No,
of course it was them, not me.
Yeah,
that's what
them.
I said.
Well, it sounds like an excuse, you know, but it turns out, later on, it goes like, "Oh, my God, yeah." I go, "I told you."
Yeah.
But for some reason, I was the first one to experience this. So Tom said, "Well, let's see how we get along." And, you know, "I've never worked with you, and I'm the artistic director of the company, so let's just see how it goes." I said, "Okay." And I go, "How did you and then one day he said, "Let's see that." And then he said, "You want to understudy the part?" And I go, "How did you choose me?" He goes, "It was Phil's idea." I go, "Really? Phil knows who I am?" Because you have to understand, Phil was like the star of the Groundlings, and he was like, you know, in everyone's eyes, they all looked up to him, and he was the only guy there who actually had a job and had a house and a new car. Everyone mm-hmm. else there was just dead broke. So I remember being in the hallway of the theater, and I saw Phil, and he's walking down, and he's in his costume, and, you know, with a trench coat and the hat and the makeup, you know, the shadowed beard, and looking like he's, you know, out of the movies. And he really had this tremendous charisma, and it was like, and I go, "Hi, Phil, I'm John Lovitz," and I never met him. He goes, "Oh, hi, sure, John, I know who you are." And I go, "You do?" And he goes, "Oh, yeah, I've seen your work, I think you're great." I go, "Oh, God, well, thanks for, you know, picking me to be in your show." He goes, yeah, it'll be fantastic. And then he walked on, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And in my head, I remember literally thinking, "Oh, my God, Phil Hartman spoke to me." I mean, that's how, you know. And so because he did that, I was like, "Well, now I'll do anything for this guy," you know. And
yeah.
So we became really close friends. You know, and I was like a puppy dog idolizing him, so I think he enjoyed it, you know. And then he invited me to his house once, and he goes, "Yeah, I've never had anyone from the Groundlings over to my house." I'm like, "Really?" He goes, "No." And I go, "Well, why'd you do me?" He goes, "Well, I like you, you know." And we were like brothers, you know.
That's great. That's mm-hmm. great. Let me take another break. We'll come back here with John Lovitz, who's at the Funny Bone in Westport this weekend. 314-469-6692. This is the Paul Harris Show on KMOX. Time now for the KMOX American Equity Mortgage Sports Update. And here is Mike Grimm with some help from John Lovitz.
Yeah.
John just mentioned a moment ago
just
that
hand him the box
good to be here on the sports.
He mentioned a moment ago that he wants to talk about Barry Bonds.
Yeah, I want to say something. I met Barry Bonds. He couldn't have been nicer. He couldn't have been more friendly. And people go, "Well, that's because it's you." I go, people don't just change like that. And I just think that this guy's about to break Babe Ruth's record, and 40% of the league was taking steroids. And I'm not saying he took them or not. But clearly the league allowed it. Clearly Bud Selig knew about it.
Mm-hmm.
If he didn't know about it, he should be fired.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's lying. And I mean, it's ridiculous.
But two things you got to remember. One, it's really Hank Aaron's record. And two, Barry Bonds...
Well, I didn't say he's... I said he's about to break Babe Ruth's record.
You're right. And the other thing you need to know is Barry Bonds, and I know this from personal experience, chooses one person a year to be nice to.
You got
and
you,
that. And you,
you
were
won.
That guy.
You won.
I don't think that's true. And the other thing is, you know, if 40%, if you go like, oh, it's because of steroids. Well, there was only three guys, Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa, and Barry Bonds, that were breaking these home run records. No one else was doing it. So how really big of an influence is that on
I think other people would have done it except Barry ate all the steroids.
No, but I mean 40%. You know, it's just it doesn't give you it. You know, batting. You know, you have to figure out what the count is. You have to figure out what the pitcher's doing. It doesn't make you. It doesn't give you better hand-eye coordination. I mean, if that was true, then why don't all the bodybuilders that enter bodybuilding contests? Why don't they just become baseball players and make millions of dollars hitting home runs?
They're too busy becoming governor.
Exactly.
Maybe Hulk Hogan, if he played baseball, would be approaching Hank Aaron's record now.
Well, okay, then why didn't he? If it's just all you have to do is be a muscle man to hit home runs.
Because you're not allowed to tear your shirt off in baseball, and that was really Hulk's thing.
But you see my point.
I got your point.
All Hulk did was took vitamins and said his prayers.
And how about it for John Lovitz? Thank you for coming in here this afternoon.
Can I say one more thing?
Absolutely.
Babe Ruth, it's documented. He was the guy who was an alcoholic. He went out drunk. He had three home runs drunk. Should you take those away? Because you go, well, you're influenced, so you were extra relaxed so you could swing the bat faster.
I think you should count those double hitting a home run when you're drunk, don't you?
It's pretty amazing.
It is.
But I'm just saying, they used to take, Reds. You know, I mean, I do a movie, I drink Red Bull to stay awake. People, every morning, they drink coffee in the morning. Everyone drinks coffee. Why? Caffeine. Why? Mm-hmm. Wakes them up so they can do their job. Thank you. Should they all be fired? If you drink coffee,
that's really
fired.
How you want to end? You really want to end on the Red Bull coffee analogy?
I like to end on, that's just the way I think. That's why I'm a comedian. What else could I do?
All right,
can't hold down a regular job the way I think. That's my point.
John's gonna be at the Funny Bone for the next three nights.
And also, I'd like to say there's a rumor going around town that I'm a Jew, and I'm not a Jew.
You're not?
I'm Jewish.
Oh. John Lovitz here on the Paul Harris Show.